This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. How big is the mental health crisis in Kansas, Missouri, and the rest of the country? Turns out it's monumental enough to, for the first time in years, bring together the three branches of Kansas government to focus on an unrelenting problem with an unfathomable price tag. Those leaders came together last month for the 2022 Mental Health Summit that more than 600 people attended, including judges, lawmakers, and mental health experts, to address mental health in the criminal justice system. Turns out we're trying to incarcerate our way out of this crisis by placing those with serious mental health issues in our jails and prisons. People with mental illnesses in the U.S. are 10 times more likely to be incarcerated than hospitalized. In other words, we treat the mentally ill through imprisonment where they don't get much care. With us to talk about this is Johnson County District Court Judge Robert Wannell, who coordinated the Mental Health Summit. Judge, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Ann Timmons is a member of the Johnson County Mental Health Advisory Board and is the mother of a son diagnosed with a mental health disorder who's previously been incarcerated. Ann, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Florida Judge Stephen Lifeman was a keynote speaker at the summit. He established a criminal mental health project in Dade County and is credited with transforming Florida's mental health system. Judge Lifeman, nice to have you as well.
Thank you so much.
Well, Judge Wannell, this struck me as such an extraordinary moment for all three branches of our government to come together for this summit on a single issue. How did you pull this off?
Well, it was a team. But yeah. I agree with you. When we left our regional summit in South Dakota, we knew if we were going to see any real change and progress, it was going to have to be a three-branch effort. And so we immediately reached out. Governor Kelly was very supportive. Speaker Reichman was very supportive. So not just at the summit opening us, but in the planning process as well. It really was a three-branch effort of one accord.
So what got you to the point, Judge, where you thought we've got to bring everyone together to begin talking about this in a more constructive way?
Well, we got to the point of if we have everybody there, obviously others are going to want to join as well. But if we have suggestions or policy changes or statutory needs that we need to address, if we have all three branches together at the beginning looking at this, it really promotes a more efficient process for actual change if change is necessary in the law. So we wanted to kind of get on the front end of having all three branches there.
You know, a lot of people were there. Were you surprised by the turnout?
You know, yes. We had a preview event back in September when we had to postpone it. And we had over 200 people appear via Zoom. And Governor Kelly and Speaker Reichman were there. And really, that just helped build the momentum.
You know, Judge Lifeman, you have said that what's happening in detention facilities around the country with so many folks who are struggling with mental health is the definition of insanity. What did you mean?
Well, it's just we keep doing the same thing again and again, and we expect a different outcome, and it just gets worse. You know, the reality is that people with mental illnesses are no more dangerous than the general population. You know, and sometimes for this population, even a couple of days in jail actually makes them worse and actually makes it more likely that they're going to come back to the criminal justice system. So we're not improving public safety by the way we're handling it. We're wasting massive critical tax dollars. And we're not really affording people an opportunity to recover. Many of these illnesses, recovery rates are better than for people with heart disease and diabetes, but we've just made the matters worse. And so by changing the structure, and you know, I give Judge Wannell so much credit and the Chief Justice of Kansas for the amazing work that they did to pull this off, but they really have put Kansas on a path to make a structural change and a significant difference that's going to help the entire state.
Judge Lifeman, what's holding us back, not only in Kansas, but around the rest of the country as well? Why are we moving seemingly as slowly as we are towards a better place when it comes to this issue?
You know, it's a great question. And I think a lot of it has to do with a misunderstanding of these illnesses. You know, people afraid, just don't really understand it. And part of the judiciary getting involved really helps educate, you know, leaders and political leaders on what really is going on and how to fix it. The other problem is there's just never been a great constituency for this population. It's not like cute babies. And, you know, it's a tough population. It's a very difficult illness. You know, people are often afraid of this population, even though they don't need to be. And so fear and ignorance have really contributed to the stigma you know, surrounding people with mental illnesses. But what we've been able to prove in Miami is that you can change it and you can reduce recidivism and you can really give people an opportunity for new life.
I was going to say, Judge Leifman, you do get a sense that the paradigm is shifting. I teach students at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and what amazes me is how open they are about their struggles with this issue. And the country at large is slowly beginning to wrap its collective arms around this idea. And the change is actually occurring with some speed, which surprises me a little bit.
You are so right. And it's really encouraging to see. I have a 19-year-old, and it's fascinating to listen to him and his friends talk about these issues. It's no big deal like it was for my generation. And they're open about it. And, you know, getting therapy and getting treatment is just like if you broke your arm, you're going to go get it fixed.
Right.
And that's a wonderful thing. And we need to teach their parents and grandparents the same thing.
And do you sense the same kind of change taking place in Johnson County, for that matter?
I do. I see people being more willing to be open and honest and have the conversation. Yet at the same time, I don't think we're where we need to be. I think that we still have work to do. And it's one of the reasons why I do these types of things, even though I'm not comfortable doing it, is I feel like somebody has to come forward and be willing to talk about it so other people come forward and are willing to talk about it.
You know, Anne, you've been dealing with this issue with your own son since the second grade. Tell me about him, his diagnosis, and what you've been up against.
I have a degree in psychology, and even with that degree, but I went on to be a teacher, and even with that degree, I was not prepared to deal with a child that had severe mental illness. When his first diagnosis came through, it was ODD and ADHD. I'd never even heard of ODD before, which is oppositional defiant disorder, and we made the choice not to tell him about it because I feel like I felt like it could be some self-fulfilled prophecy.
Right.
If you think that's who you are, that's what you'll be. And as the years went on and things progressed, it's not a perfect science. So you get a myriad of different diagnoses. And there are so many medications. And in sometimes the meds are just as difficult as the disease itself.
And you get the impression sometimes that people are sort of guessing at what any one child needs when it comes to medication, right?
That's fair. It has felt like a guessing game at times. There are things like you can do the genetic testing that do help to at least lower the guess, but there is still a guess. I know my son was on Abilify at one point, and during that two-year time, that is when he started his drug use. Once we did the genetic test, we realized that his body didn't metabolize Abilify, so he was essentially on nothing and started to self-medicate.
Mm-hmm. Hey, how have you experienced this intersection of mental health struggles and the legal system with your son?
He was – I was actually the first person that called the police on him. I did not, like many parents, didn't know what to do. I had this child that was out of control. In my mind, I thought it was going to be kind of like the scared straight.
Right.
Where I'm going to call the police. They're going to take him to a juvenile detention center and he's going to say, oh my gosh, I don't want to do this again. And that was not the way that it played out at all.
In what sense?
It was the beginning of him in the juvenile justice system feeling like, well, this isn't a big deal. This is okay.
Wow. Wow.
I go in and then mom and dad have to come and pick me up. And I like the softness of the juvenile justice system. These are kids. And so I don't think that it should be run the same way that an adult justice system should be run. And I just didn't know what to do. And it wasn't the answer. At the time, I did the best I could, but it just was not the answer. It was not the right thing to do.
How has all this affected your family?
My other two children from my first marriage, it has been extremely hard on them.
Mm-hmm.
They have, one of my daughters said that she has friends that, have family members that have mental health issues. But when my son has a manic episode, it is scary. It is traumatic. It sticks with you. And you can't live through those things over and over again, especially when it's your brother and you're watching your brother be carried out by the police.
Mm-hmm.
You can't live with that without it having an impact on your own mental wellness.
Hmm. So, Judge Winnell, what's the issue here when it comes to how Kansas handles folks like Ann's son and folks struggling with mental illness who come into the system? What, from you see it, what's the issue?
The issue, and so we've got about 15 minutes left. Can I have all that to answer?
Yeah. No, I know.
I'm glad that you said Kansas, because it really was a statewide focus. And identifying each specific issue, because there's a lot, is difficult, but we've brought the people together to address this. And the issue is, do we have a system that isn't ignoring what happened, but do we have a system that is – the key word that you're going to hear is aiming to reduce recidivism. We have a system that's aiming to reduce recidivism. So how do we get to that? We have various programs. Like, I run an AOT program, assisted outpatient treatment program, where it's a relationship building process between the court, the case managers, and the client. And we've seen a reduction in our AOT program. Our recidivism now is at 78% we don't see again. Right now, our numbers came back at 22% of the people that are graduating from our AOT program.
And why is that happening? What's the magic there?
The magic there, in my opinion, is really not just a continuum of care, but a complete community that's engaging the client. The client is developing a relationship with their case manager. They are monitoring medication. I'm developing a relationship with them through the AOT hearings that we have. But ultimately, they know that they're not alone. And we are trying to get them in a position where they understand that they're receiving the care that they need, and not eliminate, but reduce the chance that they're either going to be hospitalized or have engagement with the criminal justice system through arrest.
Well, I was going to say, the big question here is, you know, folks who struggle with mental illness sometimes break the law. Do they belong to be in prison or jail to deal with that, or do we have alternative means to help those kids?
Well, one of the speakers that we had at the summit was from Southern Arizona, Dr. Margie Balfour, and she was able to give us a lot of really interesting and helpful data as it relates to crisis stabilization. Crisis stabilization is a term that you're going to hear when you're looking at these reforms across the country. The idea being, at the point of arrest, whether a crime has been committed or not, is there an alternative to booking? Is this someone that can go to a crisis stabilization center to get stabilized and then address what happened? If a crime was committed, you still address it. You don't ignore it. But is it potentially a different system that can look at the overall picture and ultimately even that alternative system potentially reduce recidivism?
So how many crisis stabilization centers do we have in Johnson County? How many do we need, and how much do they cost? Because that's sort of what we're dealing with here, right?
Crisis stabilization centers, I'll tell you right now, there's a brand new one opening in Douglas County. Johnson County is looking at it. And because it's not a specific crisis stabilization center, we still have crisis stabilization options such as RSI, which is in Wyandotte County, and it's a partnership between Wyandotte County and Johnson County. But we're continually looking at that system. Actually, we just had a big mapping exercise last week as a county. We're continually looking at what can we do to make sure we have a crisis stabilization system in place, whether that's a specific center or the resources that we have. Number of crisis stabilization centers across the state, I can't give you that specific number, but it's one of the reasons that we're bringing everybody together is to discuss this type of data.
Well, is the Johnson County District Attorney, Steve Howe, is he on board with this approach to what you're dealing with? Because that's a big question here.
You know, in the mapping exercise, we talked about a variety of things. One of those was the potential for some type of expanded behavioral treatment court. And District Attorney Howe had representatives there, and we were able to discuss that. I've got meetings set up with them to discuss. They have an amazing mental health diversion program already. What does that look like in the overall aspect of the justice system? So yes, we've had meetings, and District Attorney Howe is on board with meeting and discussing how we address this. Absolutely.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about the outcome, the aftermath of the 2022 Mental Health Summit that brought together all manner of leaders in Kansas to deal with this ongoing crisis. And we're talking about the path forward here. Judge Lifman, I'm wondering based on what you're hearing here, do we appear to be heading in the right direction based on best practices that you're aware of?
You are, and it's very encouraging. I mean, the problem is, and Judge Winnell has mentioned, you know, touched on it, is that we've applied a criminal justice model to an illness, and we get that kind of result, and we just see people, you know, cycling again and again through the system. And so if you can intervene earlier before someone's in a crisis and make sure they have the types of supports and treatment in the community, you can avoid a lot of people ending up in the system. And you clearly are on the right track.
You know, here's a pressing question, Judge, and I know the answers sometimes are tougher to find than you might think, but there are people out there who get help, and they feel better for a little while, and then they come off their medications, they decide the medications are bogging them down too much, they feel too sleepy, they feel too dopey, and they wind up cycling right back into the system. And maybe this is a question of sort of what our capacity is in this country when it comes to medications for mental folks struggling with mental health. But how do we prevent occurrences like that? Because that's at the core of so much of this, isn't it?
It really is. And you have to be sympathetic to that. And so one of the ways to work with that is to work with the client, work with the patient, and make sure that you're providing medications that they are comfortable with. They'll tell you, you know, I've tried Abilify, it didn't work for me. I've tried X, Y, and it works better for me. And you know, you want to pay attention to that. Now, on an encouraging note, there are a couple new medications that are in the pipeline that seem to work on a different pathway of the brain. And in the stage one and two phase of the trials do not seem to have any side effects. And
you're
if that,
what are those?
Yeah,
we're talking about a miracle right drug here, Judge.
It really is encouraging. And they're supposed to be, one of them is supposed to be out this year. And if that's the case, I think we're going to see a significant change in the way people take medication.
What is that medication?
It's just, you know, all the medications that are out there today work on the same pathway. They've just been able to tweak them so they have less side effects, but they still have side effects. This is the first new drug in 50 years that actually works on a different pathway in the brain. And so it seems to have less side effects. It's a long name, so I don't know it offhand.
Yeah.
I'll be happy
I understand
to send
that.
It to you.
Yeah,
they have not given it one of those cool generic names yet, but there's a bunch of articles on it, and I've had a chance to speak to the folks that are manufacturing it, and it is encouraging. But look, they've made all kinds of promises on medications in the past, so we're going to have to see if it's as good as being advertised.
Right.
But if it is, I think it'll be a game changer, and we're going to have to make sure that, you know, the state's formularies for medication affords people the opportunity to get these, because it'll make it a lot easier for people to stay on their medication.
But
understand, people with mental illnesses take their medication about as well as people with diabetes. It's just a human thing. People don't take drugs well.
Yeah.
The problem is these medications are so important for stability. And when they don't take it, you're right, they recycle back.
Ann Timmons, tell me about your own experience with these medications and how much they help and how much they're a struggle to take and everything else.
They're a huge struggle. And that, I think, is where it intersects with the substance use disorder. Is that self-medicating that happens. I will be reading about the medication that he's talking about, because I would love to know more about that.
I would too. Yeah.
I can say that when I look at people being medicated, I think that the other piece to that puzzle to reduce the recidivism is the counseling that comes with that. I don't think it can just be meds. I think that that is a crucial part of it, but I don't think that that's the only part of it. And just being willing to try different things. I know that there is a program that is in Kansas City that is a recovery program that is trying to really focus on the cognitive behavioral therapy and the dialectic behavior therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of just focusing on the medications, trying to really focus on the therapies also.
You know, I'm really struck by what you're saying here, because we have my own experience based at UMKC. We have a terrific counseling center, gets great reviews from the students. The problem is getting appointments is tough. It takes weeks to get in. Judge Liefman, to what extent are we seeing that problem across the country, that people need help and they can't get it?
You know, it's a real problem. There's already a major shortage of psychiatrists in America, and COVID has exacerbated the problem. But, you know, your other guest is 100% correct. It's not just about medication. And, you know, strategies like mindfulness and other issues that help reduce stress also can contribute significantly. And look, if somebody doesn't have a roof over their head when they're coming out of the criminal justice system and they have other issues going on, just providing medication alone isn't going to be sufficient to help people get into recovery. but we don't provide that level of service. It's like you get a 2-minute appointment, you get your medication, and you're out the door.
Yeah.
Or you go to a crisis unit. I actually have pulled up the medication. I'll give you the name.
Can you say it?
I'm going to try.
Seeing it's one thing and pronouncing it's a different thing, Joe.
I may have to spell it, but hold on. Let me give you the actual name. I'm looking at the article right now.
Yeah.
Keep talking and I'll tell you in a minute.
Well, Judge Winnell, I'm just wondering what you're seeing at the legislative level in Topeka on this issue. I know you had the House Speaker, the Senate President at the summit, but the legislative session just ended. I didn't notice any major initiatives. Are we going to see something coming down the pike, or where are we?
Well, we had the mobile competency bill pass. I think that was pretty major legislation.
What is that?
Just addressing the issue of, do we have to have a system where an individual has to go to Larned or Osawatomie? Do we have a system where maybe from a mobile perspective, can we do competency evaluations? Because competency evaluation weight is a significant issue that the legislature is addressing, is continuing to address. But you talk about what's coming down the pipe or the movement we've seen, and I'll tell you briefly that we had Representative Landwehr on our planning committee, and she chairs the Special Committee on Mental Health Modernization and Reform. And in the middle of the process, she asked our Chief Justice, will you appoint some judicial branch representatives to serve on our committee? We have 3 ad hoc members from the judicial branch serving on her committee. I was one of those 3. I'm at the meetings. We're engaging. We're asked to provide testimony. It was the legislature really reaching out and saying, we need all of these perspectives on what's going on if we're going to be looking at specific changes. So that's just one example, that inclusion of all 3 branches. I will tell you, watching all 3 branches work together to plan the summit and even really what's happened since the summit, it's been amazing in how we're supposed to function as 3 branches.
You know, and one thing we haven't talked about much here is money. This will come with a price tag, won't it?
You know, I'm sure the answer to that is yes, and I don't mean to sound naive or ignorant of the issue, but the point is I'm going to do what I can from the justice perspective, from a judge's perspective. I'm going to present the issues. I'm going to make sure we have a conduit of information that's going to all the policymakers. But ultimately, those types of decisions is left up to the legislature. But mm-hmm. funding is always going to be an issue. But I also think, and I've seen this in my division, I also think there's a lot that a judge can do, even if particular funding's not available for an issue, such as an AOT docket.
You know, Anne, are you hopeful based on what you're seeing out of the summit, what's happening in Topeka?
I am hopeful. I feel really glad that the judge included lived experience in this. I'm going to help with the behavioral health court, and I think that is the piece that in the past has been missing, is people with lived experience being able to have input in this. And so I think it was really important that he included people.
Judge Lifeman, what's the name of that drug before I got to leave here?
It's SEP368. 56.
56.
I
okay.
told you. There you
That's our drug.
I don't know why you didn't remember that.
There you go. and remember, we're already spending money on this issue, but we're spending it poorly.
Yes.
And if you structure and shift dollars, you do need some money up front, but you can save money if you do this right.
I've got a scoot. That's Florida Judge Stephen Lifeman, a leader on this issue, and Timmons, a member of the Johnson County Mental Health Advisory Board, Johnson County District Court Judge Robert Winnell. Thank you for a very important conversation, and we'll keep an eye on this going forward.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Up to Date is a production of KCUR 89.3. Our theme music was composed by the great Bobby Watson. The program is produced by Danny Alexander, Zach Wilson, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Reginald David. Our engineer is Paul Nakatura. I'm Steve Kraske. Thanks for listening.